Welcome to Throttle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Throttle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and a former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, a radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. welcome back to Throttle Up for this week. And again, I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and it's good to be here. And I hope you all are doing well. I'm doing great. I had I took a week off. I've had a little bit of vacation time. And so we did one of our repeat shows, which are the special editions. We have a number of special edition shows that we do throughout the year, and they're designed to be played more than once. Typically, we play them whenever, you know, whenever we can't do a regular show, which is not all that often, but you know, things do happen. We're fairly busy, and I also have, a private life that is very active. And so we try to make the show interesting every week. I do think that the special editions are particularly important, particularly in this troubled world of ours, this age of confusion, I call it. And what can we do about it? I guess that's one of the reasons for this radio show, Throttle Up, is that what can we do when we encounter difficulties and things that seem to be out of place? Do we just give up, throw up our hands, or can we do something? My position, of course, is that we can and should do something about those things that seem to be out of place, those things that seem to be off kilter, those things that don't seem to make sense at all, those things that are confusing. And most importantly, I have dealt for a very long period of time with what I call the world of complexity. So whenever you encounter a situation which could be described as being complex, that's, I guess you could say that's one of my areas of expertise, is to deal with those situations in which one finds oneself and the situation is, in fact, complex. Now, complex is actually a specific environment. It is not a general thing. It can be described in very, very clear, specific, and scientific terms. So when somebody says complex, now, I know that it is often, you know, used in a general way. It is often used a little bit fast and loose. And, okay, that's fine. But, to be accurate, to be a little bit more specific in terms of how we deal with the world and how we deal with the reality around us, it is often useful for us to be clear about what we mean when we say something is complex. Typically, something is complex when three or more variables interact with one another. That's a basic definition of a complex thing or a complex system. Again, whenever three or more variables interact with one another, that then represents something that is, in fact, complex. Now, complex things have certain characteristics that are unique in a way to those things that are complex, or at least we could say that they are unusual. They are found mostly in areas that are complex. Okay, so this is part one, and part one, of course, is our continuing discussion of critical thinking, and this is all part of what we can do, basically. All right, what we can do, what can be done in this age of confusion? What can we do about the things that we, the things that we encounter, the things that infect us, the things that are of concern? What can we do? All right, so a little bit more about critical thinking. Now, a couple of things I wanted to point out just before we get into this this segment on critical thinking. And these are, you know, some current events or these things that just occurred that I think are particularly important. The two major events that have occurred within, I'm going to say within the last week. The first major event, of course, is another airline tragedy that occurred. This one with Ethiopian Airways and another new Boeing 737 crashed on takeoff, and there were no survivors. Now, this is the second occurrence of this particular airplane in the last 3 months. So this is a gigantic tragedy for the aviation industry at large. It is a gigantic tragedy for all of us that that use the air transportation system. As many or most of you know, that is the industry that I grew up in, and I spent 40 years actively participating in the aviation industry, both military and commercial aviation. I have tons of hours. I've got more than 25,000 hours of flying time, and so I have some measure of expertise, certainly some measure of concern. I'm probably more concerned and more troubled about this than I guess you would say that the average person, because I spent so much time and devoted so much of my energy to not only conducting flight operations, but working very hard to make it safe. And I worked, and in some cases, I worked at the national level with the Department of Transportation to figure out how we can improve airline safety across the board. But now we have taken a downturn in that. I think we have left down our guard. I said that a little incorrectly. We let down our guard, in my view, and something happened that we were not expecting. Although, you know, in a way, these things should not be unexpected, because if you understand anything about how problems occur or how complex problems occur, you realize that in many cases, while they may be a surprise, they may be unexpected, they really should not have been. And so the basic principle here is, can we be proactive in nipping the problem in the bud when it comes to the aviation industry and other critical industries? Can we nip the problem in the bud, or are we relegated to a life of surprises? And that's the big question that we have going forward. So I will spend some time probably next week discussing this latest airline tragedy, this accident, or the two accidents. Actually, there's more. There's more than two, but for our purposes here, we'll be discussing that in some measure of detail. I'm gonna say probably next week. It's gonna take me a while to put this special show together, but it's something near and dear to my heart. So I guess I will do it. And so we can see what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to look at this thing in terms of what should we have done, what should we have known, and to see if we can all figure out how to prevent such things, these tragedies from occurring in the future, how we can nip it in the bud. That way we can see the early warning signs developing and what all of us can do about it. Now, you say, well, I'm just a traveler. What power do I have in doing something about it? Well, you'd be surprised. You can join there's a whole bunch of traveling groups and stuff like that that can exert pressure on an industry that maybe needs a little bit of help and a little bit of encouragement or a little bit of a push to get themselves out of their rut. I think the aviation industry has been relaxing in this world where airline accidents were a rare occurrence, and I think we let down our guard, and we have gone into a place that we should never have gotten into. Okay, so we'll talk a bit more about that in coming shows. I'm assuming again that we'll do a special edition of this probably next week. And also, there will be some references made for any of us that want to take a little bit more look at this in depth. There will be some references made to some YouTube videos, some instructional videos that were just posted on this subject. And so we'll make this thing a kind of a multimedia experience. And of course, we are also in podcast format, as well as the weekend performance. Critical thinking. All right. I am going to talk again about that because it relates to what is happening in our world. It relates to what is happening around us. It relates to all kinds of things. It relates to things that are happening on the political field. It relates to things that are happening on the geopolitical field. It relates to things that are happening internationally. It relates to things like trade policy and military agreements, NATO and stuff like that. It basically relates across the board. If we are armed with a strong ability to engage in critical thinking, if we can think critically, then a lot of these things that we are seeing today would not be a surprise, would have been fixed a long time ago. Problems fester and problems amplify because nothing was done, because we believe we don't know how to fix it, or we would rather not spend the time and effort to fix problems, and so they are permitted to continue. The first thing that is typically done is the problems are ignored. Or they are downplayed, and they don't rise to a level of mission criticality. They are not considered to be mission critical problems until it becomes so painfully obvious that they are and ought to be considered mission critical. And so, you know, one of the things that I have been working on recently, and I just finished a major speaking engagement at a business group in Nashville, Tennessee on this subject, and that is to understand what is in fact mission critical, to understand what do we mean when we say something is mission critical. So that is, it's not utilized enough, I don't think, in business, in government, in the military. It's just not used enough. What, in fact, is mission critical? All right, so critical thinking. What exactly do we mean? And so we're going to be looking at a couple of really important things here for the rest of the show. But I want to just spend a little bit more time on this idea of critical thinking. How can we think critically? The first order of business in any critical thinking initiative is clarification. We must clarify the actual. We must clarify what exactly is going on. We must clarify what is really going on, not what someone tells us is going on. This someone might in fact have an agenda, and we need to look at the world objectively. We need to look at the world without bias. We need to look at the world thoroughly, not in an incomplete way, but have a complete and robust picture, a complete and robust understanding of reality. What exactly is the reality. What is the model of reality that we are using? And that's, you know, that's the most important thing. We can talk all day long about this thing or that thing or this process or that procedure or this activity or this product or this product line or this technology. But the most important thing is what exactly is the model of reality that we are using, and do we know what we are using? Do we know if we are biased or unbiased? Do we know what model of reality we use to understand the world, to understand our place in the world, to make a living in this world, to have some kind of economic success? What is the model of reality that we use? Okay, the first order of business is to clarify. Now, how do we do that? Well, we do that through what we call observe and orient. Okay, we observe something that is happening. It could be something that's happening politically. It could be something that's happening economically. We observe it, and then once we observe it, we must put it in some kind of frame of reference. Things should not be seen to exist in and of themselves. And I'm going to say that again, because this is so very important. Things should not be seen as existing in and of themselves. Things should be seen to exist within some frame of reference. The frame of reference is also called orientation. How do we orient this thing amongst all the other things that are occurring in our field of view? How do we orient this thing among all the other things on the field of play? How do we do that? That's the key. That's one of the keys of critical thinking. It's one of the keys of mission success, is this whole idea of orientation. It was first proposed by Colonel John Boyd somewhere in the vicinity of the early 1980s. In my latest book, Critical Thinking Essentials, is dedicated to Colonel John Boyd, U.S. Air Force, who lived from 1927 until 1997. Considered to be the greatest American strategic thinker of modern times by many people. I consider that to be true. And he first proposed this idea of once you detect something in your sphere of awareness, once you observe something, then you must orient it within some kind of frame of reference. It doesn't exist entirely isolated from other things. Now, you may think that it does, but it doesn't. Everything is, in fact, connected. It was proven initially by Einstein, that proved that seemingly disconnected things are, in fact, not. They are, in fact, connected. In his theory of relativity, as you well know, speed or velocity and time were, in fact, connected. They were not isolated aspects of reality. And that holds true across the board. Everything is connected. We may not understand how things are connected, but the fact is that everything is, in fact, connected. This is one gigantic network. Our reality, what we call the universal reality, is one gigantic network, and there are no random events, and there are no isolated particles within this reality that we live in. Orient. How do we orient? We orient the detected signal or the incoming information, and we do this to improve clarity. In this step, which I call orientation, we clarify the actual, and this is a critical activity. Many initiatives fail because they deal with the wrong issue or problem. And therefore, clarifying the actual through this process of orientation is, in fact, crucial. And I would say that this is a mission critical step. If you don't do this, If you don't do this orientation, then you are missing out on a particularly important, which I call a mission critical step. I was recently at this at a business conference. I was speaking at a business symposium, and I asked, kind of in passing, I asked someone who was involved in putting together projects for a particular a company. I asked, well, when you first initiate a project to do something, whatever it is, in many medium and large size organizations, companies, or and even military organizations have a pipeline of projects ongoing. But I asked this person, okay, whenever you start a project, a new project, do you first begin with a problem statement and a, or I'm sorry, a problem definition? I want to be clear about my language here. Do you first begin with a problem definition and a mission statement? Now, these are two distinct things that ought to kick off a project. The problem definition, what exactly is the problem for which we are seeking a solution without referencing any solution? And secondarily, and probably as important as the first, is what is the mission statement that justifies this project and that identifies the desired outcome? What is the performance objectives that you or I desire for this particular project? In other words, what justifies the project? A project is not just to make work, but it is to achieve something beneficial. And so what justifies the project? What is it that we want to happen? And the answer I got was, no, they never start a project with a problem definition and a mission statement. All right. And so I wasn't critical. I was there to be friendly. And of course I was. And, you know, to encourage people to do their best. And I'm sure that all these people were, in fact, doing their best. I would suggest, however, that we consider, continuous improvement and how can we do things better? How can we do things more effectively and more efficiently across the board? And I would say that we begin by trying to clearly understand what the problem is without referencing a solution, and two, what are the performance objectives? What is the mission statement that justifies doing this project with respect to a desired outcome? What do we hope to achieve? And let's be very clear about what we hope to achieve. Let's be very methodical about what we hope to achieve, and let's give it some kind of a performance metric. In other words, when we say we hope to achieve such and such, what are the performance measures by which we can determine that, in fact, we have achieved something that is desirable? We have achieved something that we intended to achieve. And that's the key. What are the measures of performance or performance measures? What is it that we need to achieve and to benefit our organization and as well as our customers? Okay, so that pretty much completes our discussion this week on critical thinking. Again, we'll be talking more about the recent airline accident, the string of accidents that are occurring. We'll talk about that more next week. Hopefully, we'll have a special edition put together where we can examine that in some measure of detail so that we can all understand how we can then get better at all of this and how we can exert pressure on the industry if that's necessary. I'm not saying that it is, because we haven't done the show, but I would suggest that it probably will be part of the show, how we can exert pressure, where we can go to exert pressure on the industry to get their act together. Because I think clearly we need to make sure that the industry puts their nose to the grindstone and gets their act together. Okay, so that completes part one. Now let us proceed on to part two. Okay, welcome back to part two of Throttle Up for this week. And part two is our storyboard. And storyboard for this week is a continuation of last week. And I wanted to really at least do this justice, which is the State of the Union address by President Trump recently. And he goes on to say in the address that America has finally turned the page on decades of unfair trade deals that sacrificed our prosperity and shipped away our companies, our jobs, and our nation's wealth. Okay. Now, this is particularly important because we were led to believe something by the political class, if you will, or by our politicians. We were led to believe something that actually didn't exist, which was a level, mutually beneficial trade policy. Obviously, trade ought to be beneficial to both parties. If it is not beneficial to both parties, then it simply cannot endure. All right? That ought to be a given principle of human existence. A trade needs to be mutually beneficial, or it will never survive, it will never endure, it will crumble and fall and deteriorate, and eventually it will cease to exist. And that's what was happening in this country, because it was not mutually beneficial. We were told time and time again that we were getting cheaper products by importing them and exporting our jobs. By exporting our jobs and importing these cheaper products, then we were beneficial. We were achieving beneficial results, overall beneficial results for the country. But that was something that was used, but it wasn't in fact beneficial, because once you cease to be able to produce something, then you are beholden to those that can produce something. And so we should be focusing not on what we import as much as what we can export on the world market. Trump goes on to say that the era of economic surrender is over. He further says that from now on, we expect trading relationships to be fair and to be reciprocal. We will work to fix bad trade deals and negotiate new ones. And we will protect American workers and American intellectual property through strong enforcement of our trade rules. And as we rebuild our industries, it is also time to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. America is the nation of builders. We built the Empire State Building in just 1 year. It is not a disgrace that it can now take 10 years just to get a permit approved for a simple road. Trump goes on to say that I am asking both parties to come together to give us the safe, fast, reliable, and modern infrastructure our economy needs and our people deserve. He goes on to say that tonight I'm calling on Congress to produce a bill that generates at least $1.5 trillion for the new infrastructure investments we need. I would go on to say, from my point of view, we need to spend a lot more money, both state money and federal money, on airports. We need to upgrade our existing airports. We need to add new airports, and that ought to be something that we ought to have a 100-year plan in place that looks at upgrading our aviation system in this country. Every federal dollar should be leveraged, President Trump says, by partnering with state and local governments and, where appropriate, tapping into private sector investments to permanently fix the infrastructure debt. In other words, we're talking about a joint effort, a joint initiative, government industry initiative, to get things done. Any bill, he says, must also streamline the permitting and approval process, getting it down to no more than 2 years and perhaps even one. Together, Trump says, we can reclaim our building heritage. We will build gleaming new roads, bridges, highways, railways, and waterways across our land. I would add their airports as well. And we will do it with American heart, American hands, and American grit. He goes on to say that we want every American to know the dignity of a hard day's work. We want every child to be safe in their home at night. And we want every citizen to be proud of this land that we love. He says that we can lift our citizens from welfare to work, from dependence to independence, and from poverty to prosperity. As tax cuts create new jobs, he says, let us invest in workforce development and training. Let us open great vocational schools so our future workers can learn a craft and realize their full potential. And let us support working families by supporting paid family leave. Okay, I would add my two cents here. I would say that, yes, we want to invest in workforce development and job training, but let's make sure it's the right kind of training and let's make sure it's the right kind of development. Just to say that we're going to do that, it doesn't negate our responsibility to make sure that it's done right. And that would be my criticism of what has happened in the past. We have assumed that just by saying that we are going to have job training, we're going to have workforce development, that it is just going to happen some way automatically or magically we get this benefit without working hard to achieve it. And that, I would say that that's one of the big shortcomings in our, in our thinking process. We need to make sure that these, whatever we are trying to do, performs well for us, and we can measure that performance. You say, well, how do we do that? Well, there are very good ways to do that, and the performance measurement community can help us out. There are many experts that can do such a thing. I know some myself, and that needs to be a part of this whole Make America Great Again, and to make sure that we have the right kind of development and training. Now, in terms of development, what are we talking about? I would say that what we're talking about, first and foremost, in development is to enable us all to become better critical thinkers, to be able to think critically on the job and achieve results and achieve mission success on a consistent basis. And how do you do that? Well, I mean, that's what one of the things that we talk about every time we have a radio show and a podcast. We talk about that. We talk about how we can do such a thing. We talk about why it's important. And we talk about how to achieve those benefits and how to achieve results by thinking critical on the job. Thinking critically on the job is something that we ought to be promoting, and we ought to be supporting that as the development side of job training. That is key. In fact, I've said this so many times now, but I guess I'll continue to say it. The number one skill set in the global job market is, in fact, critical thinking, and that was recently put out by the World Economic Forum. Again, critical thinking as well as complex problem solving is the number one sought after skill in the global job market and also the most difficult to fill. And so what does that mean? It means that we need to deal with that. We need to do something to improve that situation. We need to have an army of problem solvers in every single company in every single industry, an army of problem solvers, an army of critical thinkers and complex problem solvers. And that's what we need in all of our industries across the board, including right now the aviation industry. They desperately need to have that capability. Okay, let me finish talking about, well, and finish when I say finish for this week, talking about the State of the Union address, which I think, you know, I think it's all it's important to all of us to have read it in, you know, in some, you know, some comprehensive way, because this is really good stuff. You know, it's a roadmap as we go forward as a country, as a society. This is our roadmap. And we ought to have this almost you know almost memorized. We ought to have this idea of what is our roadmap going forward. President Trump goes on to say we can lift our citizens from welfare to work, from dependence to independence, and from poverty to prosperity. As tax cuts create new jobs, he says, let us invest. All right, as America regains its strength, this opportunity must extend to all citizens. This is why this year we will embark on reforming our prisons. Struggling communities, especially immigrant communities, will also be helped by immigration policies that focus on the best interest of American workers and American families. So what President Trump is saying is that with respect to trade, America is not just a country of consumers. America is also a country of workers. How can you be a consumer unless you are a worker? So we're not going to export workers to benefit our consumers. That's silly. That's ridiculous. We are going to establish some kind of a trade policy that benefits consumers as well as workers. So we're a country of workers. I would say this. The United States is a country of doers. We have been from the very beginning, and we ought to continue that. We ought to be very proud of the fact that the United States is a country of doers. And so a country of doers means that we do things and we make things. To the extent that we do, let's make sure that what we make is, in fact, of the highest quality and delivers the highest customer satisfaction across the board for all, for any and all customers. We make things and we do things first and foremost, and then after we do that, then we consume things, obviously, because we need to live and we need to have a different lifestyle, of course. And so we consume things to the extent that we benefit ourselves and our families and our communities. President Trump goes on to say struggling communities, especially immigrant communities, will also be helped by immigration policies that focus on the best interest of American workers and American families. For decades, he says, open borders have allowed drugs and gangs to pour into our most vulnerable communities. They have allowed millions of low-wage workers to compete for jobs and wages against the poorest Americans. Most tragically, they have caused the loss of many innocent lives. Here tonight are two fathers, and he talks about these people that have had suffered because of our immigration policies are broken, which is really too bad. It should never have happened to us. I don't know how we got in such a dire situation, such dire straits. It was terrible what's going on right now. We ought to be able to do everything that we possibly can. There's no limits to what we can do if we have the will. You know, if we have the will, we have the means. You know, we're the richest country in the world, and we ought to be able to fix our and keep them fixed, fix our immigration policies. So, what else can we say? Well, all right, so that's about it for, you know, for the State of the Union. I haven't completed it, but it is, you know, it's pretty much maybe not done. I'm going to spend a little bit more time on it because I think it is particularly important as we go through it. And so for the coming weeks, except for the special editions, we'll continue our discussion of the State of the Union because I think it's important. I don't think many shows have gone into that level of detail. I think it's important that we do so because this is a different kind of show. This is a show that helps people understand what they can do. It's not what is being done to them, but what we can do to improve ourselves, to improve the well-being of our families and communities and our country. All right, so let us now press on to part three, which will be our radio essay. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up. Now, this is a radio essay, and this is I consider this to be a real special treat. We're going to be talking about this for quite a few shows. And the treat is the new book by Victor Davis Hanson, which is called A Case for Trump. I'm going to start off here by reading the preface, and then we're going to continue because I do think this is an important book, which we will discuss. And that, of course, is the whole idea behind Throttle Up Radio and podcast, is to discuss things that are not typically discussed elsewhere. Now, does it mean that that we are going to have a large following and a great size audience? I'm not sure of that, and that's not any of our immediate concern. I do think that this is for those people who want to spend a little bit more time on a particular subject, want to learn more about it. It's one of the reasons why the Great Courses exists. That these instructional videos and the Great Courses, I have lots of them. It exists because some people, and a growing number of people, by the way, are particularly interested in learning a little bit more about something than just on the surface. So they want to improve their in-depth knowledge of certain things. They are intellectually curious. I think that's probably one of the key aspects of being a critical thinker, is to be intellectually curious. And so we're going to start off with this introduction for just a few minutes here for The Case for Trump by Victor Davis Hanson. Now, this is, I'm going to read some excerpts from the preface. He starts off by saying that The Case for Trump explains why Donald J. Trump won the 2016 election and why I, which is Mr. Hanson, and 62,984,000 other Americans, which is 46% of the popular vote, supported him on election day. And I also hope readers of the book will learn why Trump's critics increasingly despise rather than just oppose him. Often their venom reveals as much about themselves and their vision for the country as it does about their opposition to the actual record of governance of the of this mercurial Trump. Donald Trump ran as an abject outsider. He is now our first American president without either prior political or military experience. Frustrated voters in 2016 saw that unique absence of a political resume as a plus, not a drawback, and so elected a candidate deemed to have no chance of becoming president. The near septuagenarian billionaire candidate, unlike his rivals in the primaries, did not need any money and had little requirement in the primaries to raise any from others. Name recognition was no problem. He already was famous. He took risks, given that he did not care whether the coastal elite hated his guts. These realities unexpectedly proved advantageous, given that much of the country instead wanted someone, perhaps almost anyone, to ride in and fix things that compromised political professionals who did not care. With Trump, anything was now felt by his backers to be doable. His sometimes scary message was that he could not be fixed. I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Let me start over again. His sometimes scary message, Mr. Hansen says, was that what could not be fixed could be dismantled. Okay. Now, I'm going to spend some quality time on this radio essay. In fact, we may be doing some special shows just talking about this book. And that's the whole purpose of the radio essay anyway, is to discuss things in depth. And so this is a great opportunity for all of us to spend some quality time on this important book to understand what is going on. And I would go on to say that Mr. Hansen has a particularly interesting, insightful way to understand current events, to understand history. All right, so this now concludes another Throttle Up, and I certainly enjoy being here. Hope you've enjoyed it, and we will see you all next week. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. Before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.